and welcome to Talk About Jazz with Doug Hall. I'm your host, Doug Hall, and today's musical guest is Lisa Hilton. She is a jazz pianist, band leader, producer, and of course a composer, and based in Southern California. Welcome, Lisa. Thank you for being here. We're going to look forward to a 30-minute conversation with you about your musical background and your professional career, and also talk currently about your latest release, Coincidental Moments. And we're going to play portions of two songs from that, and we'll be able to listen to that and talk a little bit about that afterwards. But I always like to share some of the highlights of musicians' resumes so that the audience can better appreciate and understand the accomplishments and their recording history. Lisa began studying classical music at San Francisco State University with the renowned pianist Carlo Busotti. Did I pronounce that correctly?
I think so.
Okay. Before realizing that a career as a classical artist was not a direction she wanted to pursue at that time, she instead completed a degree in art and design and went on to pursue a successful career in visual arts, which also included a position as a creative director for a design firm in the entertainment industry. Returning to her passion for music and jazz piano in 1997, Lisa was inspired and, in her own words, reignited by a neighbor, Grammy Award-winning record producer and film composer and pianist David Foster. She also resumed her studies in theory and composition with composer Charles Bernstein at UCLA. Lisa has been recording and performing as a band leader with quartet arrangements continually for over 25 plus albums, beginning with Seduction, which was released in 1997, up to her most recent recording, Coincidental Moment, which we will also play portions of in this podcast. Finally, she has been a voting member of the Producers and Engineers Wing of the National Academy of Recording Arts and Sciences since 2003. So that's quite an extensive resume, Lisa, and I am very certain that the audience appreciates being able to understand a little bit more about a musician's background before we segue into what is the listening portion of our interview. We have chosen two cuts from Lisa's current release, Coincidental Moment, and we're going to listen to a portion of each song. The first cut is Anxiety Society. And Lisa, did you want to set that up in any way? Talk a little bit about the song before we listen to it?
Sure. I love talking about the music. I compose for us. I don't compose for myself. I compose because I want to share our world. And what are we all feeling right now? Anxiety.
Yeah.
I was questioning if I should name a song, a composition by that, but it's truthful and I always want to be honest and accountable to what I'm creating. So it's one of our favorite ones to play right now. Everybody can relate to it. When we were just traveling live and touring, everyone could relate to it. But also, besides the communication between different people, musically, I'm trying to see how far I can push dissonance. I use a lot of seconds. So I'm in everything I'm composing, there's musical exploration, but there's also the human element too. And so it's fun for us as when we're performing, when we're playing, to just hit those dissonant notes and see how far we can push them. And that's what's going on in Anxiety Society, to kind of replicate that harshness that we're feeling in our life.
Yeah. It's interesting because when I read the title of the song, I immediately responded to what you've just explained. I just said, yes, this is an extremely anxious period in our history. So here's somebody who's titled the song. And clearly, yeah, everybody, no matter where and what world you seem to be coming from, you have that anxiousness. So there is no doubt that's there. So
when I started composing, I told myself that I will always be honest. But of course I'm honest. But I think what I meant is authentic. We have to, as an artist, you have to speak what the reality is. That is your role as an artist. And so that's why we have Anxiety Society and some of the other ones I've done in the past. So
All right, so let's queue up and have a listen to a portion of it, and then you and I can talk a little bit more about it afterwards.
Okay.
An uplifting tempo, which is almost to me like a rumba in a sense, but it really grabs you and really moves. I mean, this is a blues based composition, but it really seems it's so danceable. It's so kind of bouncy. And I love that part of it because it's uplifting. So in fact, it's trying to address some of the anxiety by saying lift up and move around a little bit and shed some of the tension. I don't know, possibly.
Well, I think I'm trying to connect with you. I'm saying, I know how you feel, and we're all in it together. So let's, you know, kind of make the most of the moment a little bit. But I do like to bring in Latin influences a lot. So we have the entire spectrum of music these days as composers. So in Mozart's day, he only had his little circle of, you know, highly skilled friends. But these days we can listen to everything. So I think our music in the 21st century should have everything in it. You know, we shouldn't be limited to what's going on in our city or our country. So I like a lot of Latin influences. I like a lot of, you know, different kinds. I want to swing every way I can, Doug. I want to swing this way and that way. So there's a lot of different influences.
Yeah, it's very uplifting. And I think there's certainly a need for people to more or less get up out of their chair and try to shake off some of the stress. And certainly listening to almost a seeming like a moving, dancing piece of music with blues as a background to it is maybe something that we need to listen to more of. So changing channels, though, I really loved your much quieter, beautiful, soft piece entitled Uncommon Poetry, which seemed to be kind of like a bit of a contrast to Anxiety Society. Did you want to set that up at all, the inspiration for that song?
Well, I'm glad you chose that one, Doug. I When I create an album, I audition every composition over and over and over. And I wondered if I should put that one on the album or not. But it was just very persistent. It just kept calling to me. And so I thought, well, it would be a nice, you know, diminuendo. It would be a nice ending to the album. And I didn't know that it would get any attention, but it was just a nice way to end the album. And that is solo piano. That's where everything started. My intense love and passion for the piano as a little girl. So I try and do, sometimes I do solo pieces. And uncommon poetry is just really a reference to, you know, the beauty that's around us, that we are focusing on our anxiety. We're focusing on the politics and the crazy weather. But are we noticing the uncommon beauty right here? So I'm always trying to notice those things. As far as I know, going back to the beginning of time, we've had some bad politicians and bad weather. So that's actually not anything new. You know, there's all kinds of Napoleon, Cleopatra, you know, Hitler, all kinds of bad politicians throughout time.
Right.
And then there's terrible weather. But I want to, for myself, remember to see the beautiful things and remember to stay in touch with my passion for the piano.
Yeah. Well, not to take down a side road, but I had finally, and very very fortunately, I believe, I had 20 minutes to interview Wynton Marsalis. This was about 2 years ago. And he's very direct and very honest. So I said, so... is the world moving in a positive, negative direction, Mr. Marsalis? How is that affecting jazz and where is music going? And he had a pretty direct, fairly lengthy answer. And then in the end, he said, you know, Doug, you have choices to make. He said, if you were living during Napoleon's period and the horrible war, you still had Beethoven. So you figure it out. I get the, okay. So, all right. So focus on the lightness that is around or the inspiration that's around, even though there's some dark clouds and the world is getting scary. So that's kind of a strange segue, but that your remark reminded me of his response. So, well, okay. Yeah, let's keep on common poetry and have a listen. It's very quiet and a very lovely, beautiful, soft piece.
Thank you.
Wow. I just love the softness of the touch on the piano keys and the melody that is kind of almost like a refrain in a sense. And then you have those chords that come in that move off away from the melody. Really sounds like it's a beautiful, reflective piece.
Thank you. I haven't listened to it for a
Oh,
while.
okay. Well, I'm glad I chose it since you're happy with that. And I thought it was certainly a nice contrast, but also it's time sometimes to really listen to the musician, listen to the musician on their instruments.
Yeah.
And sometimes there's not enough of that, maybe, in some recordings. Love the softness and kind of reflective feeling to that piano solo. So thank you. Being that we're compressed in our time and interview, I do have a couple of questions, and then I hope at the end of that I can ask you a little bit about the musicians that you've been playing with and your relationship with them. I went back and looking at your general biography on your web page, with the background in art and design, obviously, you talked a little bit about how music and art come together. Your love for music, obviously, and your profession in music, but also your interest in love and art, sculpture and painting came up in your biography. Share your thoughts, if you could, about how your music combines with the art and kind of comes together in your creativity, I guess, if that's the best way I can say it.
Well, that's a good question, Doug. Well, that I have thought about it. I did not go to music school. I've only had a few music classes, maybe two or three. I had one composition class and they wanted me to write a fugue, and I said, I don't want to write a fugue, so I quit the class. Would you want to write a fugue? I don't think
Well,
so.
that sounds overwhelming. I don't know. I wouldn't have time
Yeah.
to do anything else in my life.
Well, I think that when you go to a music college and you're learning about music, it focuses you on what has been done in the past and kind of what the musical rules are and the rules that you might want to break. But I studied art, and to me, I think art is about the concept first, before you put the paint on the paper, before you pull the clay out. You're thinking, at least where I went to school, it's the concept first. So I bring that to my music first. I'm not thinking about, oh, what chords do I want to use and how I want to go 1-5-7. There's no musical foundation to speak of. So it's more from what I'm trying to communicate, not through paint, but through my medium, which is music. And I think it's the universal language that we can feel it. When you look at great paintings, you also feel that. And I think same with music, is that you get those emotions through the music. So I think it's been good. I learned about texture, I learned about history, I learned about concepts, and I apply all of that to my music. I don't think about chords, I don't think about notes, I don't think about key signatures or anything. So it's more gestural, I think.
Interesting. Certainly, there is such expression in certain artists that it can translate to your feeling of inspired for composition, just as one, if a writer is inspired by poetry when they've gone to a museum and seen a particular artist or a particular painting. So,
But
also,
my music comes from inside, though. I don't look at a painting and then become inspired. It comes from my inside. Yeah.
Comes from your
So,
inside.
yeah, I let my subconscious come out through improvisation.
Right. So maybe it helps inspire you in some ways, possibly. Yeah. Okay. Well, actually, along the same thought of expression of music, as I look through the titles of your album recordings, there are references to nature, of course, and physical surroundings. I know you are in resident in Southern California, and I think you've spent most of your life there when you're not touring and traveling. And I have spent a couple of trips recently to San Diego and then all the way up to the Redlands National Park and back again down through Yosemite.
Beautiful.
Yeah, for a month. So it's the geography and the nature and the landscape of California is so very, very different than New England in all the ways that you know. Could you talk a little bit about, obviously, your influence with your physical surroundings? I could list off some of the names of your songs and albums, from Transparent Sky in 2021 to Oasis 2018, Sunny Day Theory 2008, and then one of your songs, Paradise Cove, I think, which is just north of you in Malibu.
Horizons is another one.
Horizons is here, Sky and Oceans, Mojave Moon. So I'll just let you kind of share how that physical surrounding, I know it's not necessarily always easy to put it into words, but how that comes into your frame of thought in composing and or inspiration.
Well, I came from a very musical family, but also my dad was a biologist. He was a professor at the local university. And I grew up with a love of nature. I learned my wildflowers when I was in fourth grade and always wanted to be hiking. So to me, music and nature are the most uplifting in life and regenerative, I think. So I always try and spend as much time as possible outside or at the piano. It's kind of 50-50. So those things go hand in hand. In terms of life lessons, though, I feel that we can find comfort, that we can find own solutions if we look at nature. So no matter what's going on in the world, the sun is always rising and the sun is always setting, no matter how bad it looks. We also see in nature that no matter how difficult some challenge is that nature heals. And we will too through our challenges. So I find a lot of source of just my own substance in nature. I feel like it's going to be okay. You know, the ocean's still there. And even with the catastrophic weather we've been getting occasionally or earthquakes, you know, our world heals and we can too. So I think I'm trying to give that message myself in my, in art.
Yeah. Now, my own personal experience, just by being in California for that period of time, the Redlands National Park and then Yosemite, I visited both when they were basically empty. So there was a lot of solitude and a lot of reflection, and there weren't a lot of distractions or cars or traffic. It was a very quiet step back into nature. So it was incredible.
Yosemite is, of course, beautiful.
Well, look, closing in on the end of our interview, I wanted to give you a chance to talk a little bit about your relationship with the current musicians in your quartet. And I'll just kind of leave that open to you as you care to introduce them and the background and relationship that you've had with them.
Okay, thanks. I love our band. And in fact, we just were on tour and just had a terrific time. Amazing players. I have worked with Rudy Royston as a drummer for, I think, maybe a dozen years, 15 years. He's an amazing drummer, but he's even more amazing when we're playing live. He has so many creative things and sounds. It was just so much fun. And then Luquez Curtis, I've been using as a basis for maybe about 8 years. I worked with Larry Grenadier about 6 years, and then now I'm working with Luquez. And he's just a really fine basis, a really nice person too. And he introduced me to his former roommate at Berklee College of Music, and that's Igmar Thomas. So they used to be roommates. And so it's been wonderful. Igmar is an amazing trumpeter, but beyond that, he's one of the nicest musicians I've ever met. He's just a beautiful artist, a beautiful musician, beautiful spirit, and an incredible virtuoso on his instrument. When you see people who are incredible improvisers, you know, really high skilled improvisers, sometimes they are good, sometimes they're great, and sometimes they're off the charts. And I was able to experience that on stage with him on our last tour. Just really an amazing musician. So all of them, we all get along. We all love our instruments. We had a conversation where we were talking about doing something else, and we all said the same thing. We're like, no, I want to keep playing right now. We love our instruments. We love to practice. We love to play. So it's a great group.
Yeah. Well, there's nothing more sort of special and inspiring than having that relationship with the musicians that you work with intimately. Are there any performances upcoming that you want to mention? I know that you were just on tour for your current release. Are you planning on future performances that are upcoming in 2024?
Not right now. I am now composing for the next album. So on my piano, when we're done here, I have 13 songs that are just in the beginning stage. And then I listen a lot and nurture them up. Mm. You know, I'm trying to go have about 10 that I feel strong. So it's like I have new friends and new ideas on the horizon. So it's an exciting time for me. And then we'll go together in the studio late summer and start the process over again. But right now, I don't know what the music will be. I don't know what the concept will be. It just reveals itself to me in the next couple months. So it's my favorite time, just composing. Yeah. But we were in Los Angeles, San Francisco, Chicago, New York, Carnegie Hall, up in Maryland. Pennsylvania. Great time.
Wow. Well, as we close our interview, of course, now that I know that you're working on a future composition, best of luck with all the muse and inspiration and what comes sometimes without even planning on it, which I guess is sometimes the best flavor or color. I have finally had an opportunity to talk with you and very much enjoyed your current release, and look forward to at some point seeing you perform live when you return to possibly the Boston or New York area. And we can chat again. So Lisa, thank you so much for your time today and openly sharing your thoughts and musical ideas and experiences and influences. So I appreciate
you for having me.
You're welcome. Take care.